Thank you for including Wisconsin Public Radio in your busy day. We're here for you, and sometimes, like right now, programs are all about you. This is Spectrum West. Where Western Wisconsin comes to talk with and listen to people who make the arts and culture come alive where we live. This week, we polish the brass and tell you where you can hear the sound coming out of it. The Sheldon Theater Brass Band from across Big Muddy in Red Wing, Minnesota, playing a special Sunday night concert at the Phipps Center in Hudson. We have their story and their sound. Jumpstart Downtown is a contest that's been providing support to winning concepts for 13 years. We have details about this year's opportunity from Ray French, an Eau Claire City official and downtown diplomat. Jim Oliver engages verbally with Kathy Welch of the Old Jim Theater in New Richmond about a play for young people and then skillfully jumps the track to find out even more, as he so often does. Jim also provides a look at West Wisconsin stages active with spring productions. And this is where our conversations begin. One word that comes immediately to mind on the topic of places like Hunt Hill Audubon Sanctuary is rich, as in rich heritage and rich resources. I thought I knew a bit about the place, but while strolling through material to prepare for this segment, I was able to read about the history and how it so vitally shapes their present time. Saturday's a big day at the camp and Nature Center near Sirona, Wisconsin, and to get details, I spoke with director Nikki Janison. 600 acres, 10 miles of hiking trails? How cool is that?
And all open to the public. And yeah. Actually, we've just added another 3 miles. This weekend, we'll be handing out our new trail maps with those new trails on them.
So at lunchtime, everybody who works at Hunt Hill, you can nibble and walk at the same time.
Exactly.
Do you do that?
Well, we do spend a lot of our lunches outside soaking up the sun, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. You also have footbridges.
We do. Our Bear Trail is our longest trail. That's about a 3 mile long loop. Along it, you actually cross over two channels. So our property completely surrounds two glacial lakes, but we're on a chain of four.
Wow.
And so the two footbridges cross over those channels that lead into other lakes.
And there's a camp that can accommodate up to 80 people. There's a couple of cabins, and I looked at those photographs. I want to stay at one of those cabins now.
Yeah, it's wonderful. You know, we have dining facilities here on site. So in the summer, we do a lot of different residential programs. We've had reunions and weddings here who have, you know, enjoyed a long weekend. And then the historic cabins were actually built in the early 1900s by the original landowner.
Mm-hmm.
And those we do rent out to people.
Do you feel as if, do you hear from people that Hunt Hill Audubon Sanctuary turns out to be one of northern Wisconsin's best-kept secrets? Are people saying, had no idea you were here, and now I'm coming back all the time?
That's what we hear so often. And we'll have people who call us up from Texas or New York and say, I remember being there 20 years ago, and those memories still bring a smile to my face.
Mm.
So we are a well-kept secret and one that we're trying to spread the word on because it's such an incredible place and there's so much to do here that we really want people to have the opportunity to get to experience nature. And the thing I really love about Hunt Hill is when you get into camp, you can experience such a diverse array of Wisconsin habitat within a short walk from the parking lot. So you really get to experience a lot of really great nature very mm-hmm. close to Hunt Hill.
And everyone is going to have a wonderful opportunity to experience Hunt Hill this Saturday. The Prairie Fling, we'll talk about that in a moment. I wanted to bring up, because you did previously, the original landowners, the Andrews family, early environmentalists, and they rubbed elbows with people like Aldo Leopold, Owen Grammy. If you're a bird person, you love the paintings that Owen Grammy has done over the years. And there was something I learned. I did not know that Ernest Oberholzer was the original Boundary Waters guy. And there's so many people that go there, too. I wonder how many people know about Ernie.
Well, Frances Andrews, the daughter of the Andrews family, the one who donated our property.
Yeah.
My understanding is that she was very instrumental in helping Ernest protect the Boundary Waters, and that was a really big passion of hers as well.
Now, Frances donated the land to the Audubon Society because she was heiress of the Andrews estate. The camp officially opened in 1955. It ran for 31 years, but sadly, it closed in 1986. But I'm happy because developers were about to swoop in. passionate people saved it in 1989. And now, Nikki, thanks to people like you, 4,000 people a year use the facility and programs in a healthy way, too. In other words, you can accommodate people all year round.
We're working on being able to accommodate people year-round. We started doing some programs in our quiet season, which is the winter, because the majority of our buildings are just open in the summer.
Okay.
But we've had a lot more interest in having programming year-round. So we have been looking to the future and how we can expand to meet the needs of our community and offer those year-round programs.
Nikki Janison on the phone with us, Executive Director, Hunt Hill Audubon Sanctuary, hosting their big annual Prairie Fling Saturday. It's from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Things like Prairie Fling are more vital than ever because you now have ownership. As of January of this year, the Friends of Hunt Hill Audubon Sanctuary became the owners. The National Audubon Society donated it. So what's the relationship with the Audubon people now, other than the fact that they're still in your title?
When National closed the camp in 86, our friends group formed and had a lease of the property. So every 10 years, that lease would come due, and we okay. never knew if we'd get to keep being here. So getting ownership of the property is huge for us and just ensures that we can continue to do all the great things that we do, and we don't have to worry about that 10-year clock ticking and what might happen. So it's really exciting for our community and for our group to have this property. And our relationship with National Audubon Society continues to be a positive one. But getting the property was important for us so that we had a more secure future.
We mentioned the cabins already. Those are a couple of remnants of the Andrews family having been there. Other than that, does Francis and the Andrews family, do they live on in a prominent way at Hunt Hill?
They do. Frances wrote a wonderful letter when she donated the property to National Audubon with her wishes, and our friends group uses that to guide everything that we do. It says a lot in our name alone. A lot of people, when they come here, say, why are you called Hunt Hill if you're a nature sanctuary? Well, Frances's mother's maiden name was Hunt,
yeah.
and they had the two cabins located on a hill. And then one of the powerful statements in her letter was that it's good to live with large and old trees. And she asked that everything get to live its full natural life. So even though Hunt isn't our name, we don't hunt here. We are a sanctuary. So all of our property and all of the living things within it are protected. So Hunt Hill is a great place to come year-round, especially during hunting season, because those trails are safe for people to hike on.
Oh, yeah. All right. The Prairie Fling is Saturday. Tell us about the day, because it's a biggie.
Yeah, so our Prairie Fling Festival, this is the sixth annual event. It started out as a way for us to try to encourage people to come out and visit us, celebrate spring. So Prairie Fling, its goal is to connect people to people, people to community, and people to nature. And so we offer this event this Saturday, May 20th, from 10 until 4. Mm-hmm. And it's really fun. People park across the road, and then they have the option to walk through our prairie, get their 1,000 steps for the day, or they can take a tractor ride, or one of the favorites has been the horse-drawn wagon rides through the prairie, which deliver you into camp where all the activities are going on. And once people get into our main camp, they'll see lining our driveway are a bunch of different artisans selling everything from homemade baked goods to honey that is produced right on the Hunt Hill property, jewelry, upcycled art, just a wide variety of things people can look at. There's food. We also have community groups. Hunt Hill does a lot of different things throughout the year and offers a lot. But there's also a lot of other great community organizations that are doing important things. And we wanted to give them an opportunity to share what they're doing as well. So people can wander through and learn about what's happening at places like the Canoe Museum, the local libraries, the National Park Services here, local lake associations. Another really popular one is when Boy Scout Troop 104 comes and they build a fire and make fresh cooked cobbler.
Ooh.
So a lot of fun things and tasty things to check out. We also have educational programs. At 11 o'clock, the National Park Service is going to be presenting on the secret life of clams, which might not sound that riveting, but everyone who I've talked to who's seen it, so it's a really great program.
The reason that you'd want to see this is because of the phrase, I'm happy as a clam.
Right.
Why wouldn't you want to know what makes clams happy?
It'll be a great program, and Joan is a wonderful presenter, and she'll be leading that. Mm-hmm. And then at noon, we have the Audubon Center of the Northwoods, and they'll be presenting a raptor program that'll actually feature live birds of prey, so people can get an up-close view of some of these different raptors. And then we also have live music. So as people are wandering through camp, they're going to hear a lot of great string music. We have Eric Shubring, who will be performing in the morning. And then we also have Second Wing String Band, who's an old-time fiddle dance band. And then we also have Son of Mel in the afternoon. And something that we're really excited about, a new thing this year, around 1:30, we're going to have Shell Lake High School's a cappella group performing at our amphitheater.
Oh.
Yeah, so it should be a really fun mix of different live entertainment. We also have tons of kids' activities as well. So thanks to all of our different sponsors, we're able to provide a lot of things at no cost to our families. The first 100 kids will get a free Pinewood Derby car that they get to pound on the little wheels and then decorate and then have tons and tons of tracks they can race them down. Sure. We also have free face painting. There's a straw bale fort, yard games. We have characters, and Fantasy Corral is bringing their petting zoos. And the nice thing about Fantasy Corral is they actually bring information about their animals. So you get a chance to learn about new animals as well.
If you come at 10 o'clock in the morning, suddenly it's going to be 4 o'clock. I mean, those 6 hours are going to fly by with so much stuff to do. And at 1 o'clock, you're going to kind of celebrate, aren't you? You're going to celebrate the ownership.
At 1 o'clock, we have a program called Taking Flight, and it's a chance for us to celebrate two really huge things that have happened for our friends group this year: gaining ownership of the property. Mm-hmm. The other piece is that we recently had an incredible supportive family step forward and offer to match every dollar we raise until December 2019, up to $1 million to establish an endowment for our friends group.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's really an exciting time for us. And by establishing an endowment, it's going to give us a more stable financial base so that we can look at doing more expanding, upgrading our facilities, winterizing so that we can offer those programs year-round to our community.
All right, so people other than attending the Prairie Fling, the 6th annual on Saturday, they can get involved in Hunt Hill memberships. You can make donations. You can attend this and other fundraisers. You can also volunteer. So how do people get information? You do have a website, and it's a wonderful one. Tell us what it is.
The website is hunthill.org. Everything about our $1 million match to Prairie Fling to all of the other events that we do throughout the year.
Well, now I know why you're executive director, because you cover it all. Nikki Janison of Hunt Hill Audubon Sanctuary, thank you so much for being with us on Spectrum West. You are good friends to all of us, and hopefully we'll see you Saturday.
Thank you so much for having us. We appreciate talking with you and appreciate seeing everybody come out to enjoy the site that we have.
By the way, Hunt Hill is east of Highway 53, about 18 miles north of Rice Lake and about 13 miles southeast of Spooner. Again, it's Saturday, 10 to 4, the Prairie Fling. This is what families should be doing together. Down the road on Spectrum West, a brass band in the finest tradition of the configuration, jump-starting businesses and downtown all at the same time, and Jim Oliver is next. Support for WPR comes from True Endeavors, presenting Mary Chapin Carpenter at Eau Claire's State Theater Thursday, October 12th. Carpenter will celebrate a brand new album. Tickets and information at EauClaireArts.com. Support also comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, announcing the new Altoona office at 1395 Blue Stem Boulevard in the River Prairie development. Now open with a full range of services. More at WisconsinCU.org. Well, Mr. Jim Oliver reports for duty, and this week the topic is theater, and the place is New Richmond.
The Old Jam Theater of New Richmond is staging Stuart Little evenings through Saturday and weekdays through June the 9th. Stuart Little is part of the Old Jam Theater's youth season, which includes shows that are performed for schools from all around Minnesota and Wisconsin. Returning to Spectrum West to talk about Stuart Little and to bring us up to date on what's happening at the Old Gem is the theater's artistic director, Kathy Welch. Welcome back.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Well, why don't you just start out by telling us about who this Stuart Little is.
Stuart Little is one of our most popular plays. The original book is by the same author who did Charlotte's Web. It's about a mouse who is born to a family in New York and goes on great adventures and runs into a lot of problems because of his very small stature.
Plays are selected to tie into curriculum and area schools. So mm-hmm. How does a story of a mouse tie into a curriculum?
Well, it's one of the greats of children's literature, and a lot of the schools, they read the book or they read parts of the books to the students or have the students read them. In addition to reading it, this is a nice one because there's a very popular film that came out several years ago, and so we've found a lot of the students are familiar with either the book or the movie or both the book and the movie, so then they get to kind of see how you bring literature to life in film, and then they come here and they can see how it's changed again when it's brought live on stage.
How large is the cast? I think you double cast parts for
yeah,
the students.
Yeah, this is one of the shows where we have professional adult actors as well as our young student performers in the show. And so we have two adult performers who are in all of the shows, but then we have the kids are split into two casts. So that way nobody has to miss all that much school because they're performing for school groups that come during the day here at the theater.
Now, how far of a loop do you have to attract your youth actors, particularly adults? Come from, I realize, can come from anywhere, but how about the students? Where do they come from?
They actually come from quite a ways, especially during the school year. We get kids, a lot of kids from New Richmond, of course, mm-hmm. But also we've got students from Hudson. We've got students from Stillwater. They cross the river into another state to come to
wow.
come work with us.
What's happening now for the summer? You have your summer theater camps?
Yeah, we do two summer sessions. We used to just do one, but it got so popular that we've added a second one. And so what we do is 2 3-week sessions. We start right after the 4th of July and run for 3 weeks and then do a show and then start another one immediately. So this year, our first session is going to be an adaptation of Robin Hood that I'll be writing pretty soon here. Hmm. And then the second one is going to be a miniature version of Bye Bye Birdie.
Going back to Stuart Little, you mentioned you're writing the Robin Hood. I realize that you rewrite a lot of the material that goes on stage there. So how much rewriting did you do for Stuart Little?
It does depend from show to show. When I'm working from a book that already exists, it's a lot of adapting to take the dialogue and make it make sense on stage and figuring out ways to handle the narrative and that sort of thing. So it's not like writing an original, but it's still challenging.
I can understand that. Coming this fall, what are the shows that you're anticipating after the school starts?
Well, every single year, we do our annual Johnny Appleseed right away in the fall. We've got teachers that have been coming to that for decades now. and then we do a show that's all kids in it, and that's going to be Aladdin this fall. At Christmas time, not quite sure we've got the rights yet, but we're planning on doing A Year with Frog and Toad.
Ah. We're talking to Kathy Welch, who is artistic director of the Old Gem Theater in New Richmond. Well, I'd like to get off the Old Gem Theater for just a moment, and I'm aware that you are, I discovered through my timeless research. You're the artistic director of an organization called Green Tea Productions.
I am.
Well, tell us about Green Tea Productions.
Green Tea is a small experimental theater company that's based in the Twin Cities. We started that when I moved back to the Twin Cities from years and years and years of graduate school and traveling the world and all of that, and mm-hmm. was looking to find an outlet for different types of theater I had been studying. My graduate school background is in traditional Asian theater forms, and so we formed Green Tea so that I could work with some different styles of theater.
Does that expand itself into any of the shows that appear on the stage at the Old Gem?
Actually, occasionally we're able to do collaborations between the two organizations. And this past year, we did 1,000 Cranes. It's based on a wonderful book, Sadako and the 1,000 Paper Cranes, that a lot of students read in school. And so we decided it would be an appropriate Old Gem show. But we used performers from Green Tea Productions. It's set in Japan after the bombing of Hiroshima. So we used traditional Japanese music and dance to help us tell the story.
I found Green Tea Productions, and it says something about you spent 2.5 years studying Asian theater in Japan.
I got my graduate degree from doctorate from the University of Hawaii, and as part of that program, I spent 2.5 years in Japan studying first language and then several of the art forms, dance and theater and some music, and then I did research for my dissertation in Osaka and Tokyo.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about Asian theater. How does it differ from, I don't know, American, British, European?
Well, most of the forms that I studied, primarily in Japan, but also in other parts of Asia, the traditional forms are sort of a storytelling, dance movement-based type of theater. So it's a lot more symbolic than Western theater. It's more movement-based, dance. It's very larger-than-life characters and stories. So it's not realistic. It has a lot in common with a lot of the children's theater I do, but it doesn't have a lot in common with, say, your typical, I don't know, Harvey or something like that, that's more based in reality.
Mm-hmm. I barely have gotten out of the upper Midwest in terms of looking at theater anywhere else, but is there any Asian theater being done around the country right now?
Oh, sure. It's there's a couple of several generations now of artists who have traveled to Asia or are from Asia that are working in the United States and combining those kinds of performance styles. Perhaps the most famous example I can point to is Julie Taymor, who directed The Lion King.
Mm-hmm.
She gets a lot of influence from time that she spent in especially Bali, but in other parts of Asia as well. And so a lot of the puppetry and the pageantry of Lion King is inspired by traditional Asian theater.
If we were interested in going see an Asian theater production, where would be a good place to go?
Well, actually, the University of Wisconsin at Madison, one of the teachers there, David Furumoto, is also a University of Hawaii graduate, and he frequently does work that is based in either Asian forms or more specifically, Japanese kabuki forms.
It's uh-huh.
a great place to see things.
Hmm. Well, we've been talking to Kathy Welch, who is artistic director of the Old Gem Theater in New Richmond. We've moved off into Green Tea Production and Asian theater a little bit here. But anyway, the Old Gem is presenting evening performances of the tale Stuart Little through Saturday. Weekday performances for school groups will be presented through June the 9th. Ticket information and anything else you want to know about what's happening at the Old Gem can be found on its website at www.oldgemtheater.com. Kathy Welch, always great to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Great. Thank you. I enjoy it.
As do we enjoy Jim Oliver's appearances every week on Spectrum West. Thank you, sir. Here's a Spectrum memo. ArtReach St. Croix presents the fourth and final Birdhouse Auction fundraiser. If you're listening on Thursday, that's today in Stillwater, Minnesota. Begins at 6 p.m. Sneak peeks available online at artreachstcroix.org/birdhouse. Now we're closing out what's been called Creative Economy Week in Wisconsin and our West Wisconsin River Valley. It's featured a series of events in which has been discussed ways to keep the ball rolling, as it were. The city of Eau Claire is a prominent partner in all the energy, and Ray French is a business assistance specialist within that municipal entity. He's also a player in Downtown Eau Claire, Inc., sponsor of the annual Jumpstart Downtown Competition, where entrepreneurs present ideas and plans for new commercial enterprise designed to move and fit into the city's center, where it must be a lot of fun working right now, because there's a lot going on.
Absolutely. It's a very energizing place to be right now.
So you've been here a year, you told
yes.
me. Wheels were turning when you got here. Fun to jump on the treadmill because it was already rolling?
Absolutely. I joke that I get to ride Mike Schatz's coattails. All the success that he's helped generate for downtown, it's pretty amazing, the story that we get to tell.
Was what is going on in downtown Eau Claire part of the impetus for you saying, I'd like this job?
As a family, we decided we wanted to move back to Eau Claire, like a lot of people are doing now, and downtown was a major factor in providing places for us to bring the kids. It's a very family-friendly place and mm-hmm. a place that we can then have our own dates, and there's festivals, and it's an amazing place.
Yeah. I would think a business assistance specialist 15 years ago in Eau Claire might have been kind of like the Maytag repairman. Do you remember those commercials?
Vaguely,
had nothing
yes.
to do?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, they did a lot of heavy lifting back then with generating interest and spending time going out of the city to try to recruit businesses. And now we're getting enough work just answering the calls we get.
Is this a relatively new position?
I think my position was created and has evolved. It started as an economic development clerk, and as work got more steady, they needed another full-time person to help out.
Jumpstart Downtown Contest, it's called. Now, I read that 33 participants in the contest have opened businesses downtown. So who are some of the frontline people who may have been part of this first effort?
Well, 2 years ago, the winner was Latitude 44 Yoga Studio, and they are open in the North Barstow District.
Right.
Prior to that was the Offbeats Violin Repair Shop there in the South Barstow District. And we're really excited. Last year's winner, Ramon's Ice Cream Parlor, opens this weekend Galloway. We're very excited to see that open and be a hub right next to Phoenix Park for people to get some delicious ice cream.
Every town has to have
several
ice cream parlors.
Yes.
You know, and as I was noodling this whole concept of a jumpstart contest, I concluded how intelligent it is. It causes people, first of all, to consider coming downtown. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it provides ideas on how to keep the momentum going, because you get to talk to a lot of people who have things going around in their heads. You glean information to use going forward.
Absolutely. This is a great effort by the Downtown Eau Claire Board to continue building that business climate, supporting small businesses and entrepreneurs in the downtown area. We get to encourage the small businesses, provide them a little startup capital, and help create that environment. And you're seeing that with a lot of the new business owners creating their own network of support. They're all supportive of each other, promoting each other's activities. Mm-hmm. And I think having Jumpstart be in existence for so long and have created or help assist in the creation of so many businesses, this climate has really taken off.
Enjoying some studio time with Ray French. He's Business Assistant Specialist for the City of Eau Claire. The Downtown Eau Claire Incorporated,
yes.
DECI they call it,
yes,
putting on the Jumpstart Downtown Contest again this year. Walk me through the process. You have a deadline of September 1, I believe.
We typically get out the program in the spring. It came out about a month ago.
Right.
The deadline is September 1st and are accepting applications all summer. We encourage people to talk with some of the business support services in town, you know, the Small Business Development Center or Western Dairyland Business Centers, in helping prepare their applications. We require a business plan, signed application, and a resume. And then our panel of judges will review all of the applications, select finalists for a presentation among the judges, and they will make the final selection.
This Jumpstart thing has been going on for...
Yeah, we're in our 13th year.
Okay.
Hope that's not unlucky to this year's winner, but we can't really skip a year.
Oh, it'll be very lucky. Are there any special characteristics for a business or potential business in order to fit in a downtown area? Do you have to be somewhat specialized, or is downtown just wide open to anything nowadays?
I think that's what makes downtown so special, is that just about anything can work. And I think that's a great factor in a successful downtown, is having so many different options.
Yeah.
So, the winners have been just about anything over the course of the past 13 years, from high tech to gift shops to, personal service businesses as well.
And I'm guessing that businesses out there are entering and possibly winning, and they are people who, back on the road a bit, may have never thought of coming downtown.
Absolutely. And that's part of that business network that's been established. It's easy for people to meet other new business owners, ask for help. And, there's the entrepreneurial training program. There's so many resources out there for entrepreneurs and small business owners to use to learn the skills and to really take that plunge.
I'm betting that a lot of businesses who may not have won over the years have gone on to be successful.
Last year's third place winner, the N7 Cafe, they've been greatly successful this last year. They are presenting at the 1 Million Cups this week.
Oh, sure.
And they're getting in all sorts of stores all over town, and they've been very active just from the exposure, too.
There may be some young people out there who are in college and they're taking business and they're doing this or that. Do you have a message to them about entrepreneurship? Entrepreneurship nowadays, I think, has a luster that it might not have had, and not just in Eau Claire, but just because of the way society runs now, the ability to do things on your own and be independent. So the word entrepreneur is actually kind of alluring now.
It sure is. I think a lot of the downtown business owners would share that, and you see many of them promoting that idea. In downtown, we've got Becca Cook at Red's Mercantile. She created her own Red Letter Grant project for supporting women entrepreneurs. There's a lot of giving back with entrepreneurism, too, that we're seeing.
I should look up the official definition of entrepreneur. I'm thinking to myself, if I go to a dictionary, will it say someone who is creative, someone who takes chances, someone who what? You think it's a combination of all those things?
I think it's someone who pursues an idea that they think will help make someone's life better, provide a product or service that will help somebody. You see a lot of that with people going into their various businesses in order to create a place or a service or a product that people will enjoy and make a difference and make people happy.
It's a French word. I should look it up.
I should probably look it up as French.
That's right. I forgot.
Yeah.
That's your name. Did you tell me who does the judging? Is it a panel? Is it you?
We have a panel of five judges this year, attorneys and lenders, business lenders.
Are you in on the presentation?
Yes, yes.
What kinds of presentations do people make? Sky's the limit. Are there some where they're just fun and they come with all different kinds of neat stuff to wow the panel?
Sure, sure. Yeah, they bring visual aids. And one of the most engaging things is watching the entrepreneur talk about their idea and seeing how engaged they become and how passionate they are. And so every presentation is fun because you get to see them promoting their idea. Unfortunately, Ramon's Ice Cream Parlor did not bring us samples last year.
But could have won.
Yeah.
So what are the prizes?
This year, we're excited to announce expanded prize packages. The first prize winner gets $5,000 in startup capital, sponsored by Royal Credit Union. They also receive some brand development strategies and some marketing assistance with JB Systems, and an advertising credit with the Leader Telegram, and a Decky Media package that goes to all winners.
What does that include?
Well, we'll come do a ribbon cutting. We'll give you News from Downtown section and another newsletter promotion.
Does that mean the giant scissors?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, because
And they're real.
I would want regular scissors.
No.
I want the big ones.
Yeah.
Okay.
The honorable mention, this one is an expanded package as well with $1,000 in startup capital from Xcel Energy, a Spin Vision virtual tour combo package. And the third prize winner gets to attend the entrepreneurial training program with the Small Business Development Center. Another thing I want to mention, too, is that downtown is a bigger place than just the Barstow area. You know, a lot of people think of downtown and it's the South Barstow area, the North Barstow area, and those are incredibly important to our downtown. But if you want to be a part of Jumpstart, we get this call all the time. Water Street counts. That's part of downtown, absolutely.
Sure.
Grand Avenue, Banbury Place, the Bellinger area, even some of these neighborhood commercial corners would even count if you're kind of within that bowl,
that physical geographic
bowl of downtown. There's a lot of opportunity and a lot of places for you to start your business in downtown.
Ray French, Business Assistance Specialist, City of Eau Claire, the Jumpstart Downtown Contest. It's on now, and your deadline is September 1st. We should tell people, Ray, where they can get information. There is a website, and you have an email address to send questions if they have any.
Absolutely. They can get the application at www.downtowneauclaire.org/jumpstart. And you can reach me at ray.french@eauclairewi.gov.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Al. I appreciate the time.
Downtown Eau Claire, they have the energy and the figurative jumper cables. All you have to have is a dream and a vision for making it a reality. Coming up, music from a brass band in the finest traditions and where you can see and hear them live on Spectrum West. Support for WPR comes from Explore La Crosse, announcing River of Festivals featuring Art Fair on the Green, Irish Fest La Crosse, Eat Week, and over 50 other festivals. Details at explorelacrosse.com. Here's a Spectrum memo. The Potter's Shed in Shell Lake will host a ragtime piano concert by UW Superior Professor Alexander Sandor on Saturday. That's at 7 p.m. Proceeds will benefit the Shell Lake Art Center. The website is shelllakeartcenter.org. The word brass in a non-musical arena conjures up thoughts of self-confidence, chutzpah, assertiveness, and a rather high rank, brass. In the musical world, it denotes polished silver and gold metallic instruments into which hearty individuals forcefully exhale and out comes lovely melodies. Both perspectives of the word brass describe the makeup of the Sheldon Theater Brass Band, bold and confident and hearty individuals with wonderful skills. That's them playing in the background. Let's listen a bit. Named after the iconic T.B. Sheldon Memorial Auditorium in Red Wing, Minnesota, the band plays their role of ambassador very nicely, and the band performs Sunday at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson, Wisconsin. Band member John Mundy graciously provided some background. It's labeled as the band in residence at the Sheldon Theater. So, John, there was a historic band, and this is the modern version, or what? What's the story?
Actually, there was a Red Wing Brass Band a long time ago. We started at the same time the Sheldon Theater, built in 1903, was restored, and that was in 1988. So our band began in 1989. And, of course, the theater was anxious to have some acts and performances that were there multiple times during the year. So we made an agreement with them that we would kind of be a resident performing ensemble. And we're lucky enough we get to rehearse there every Monday night as well.
Oh, cool. Well, since you're the guy who has the guts to be on the radio, I'd like to know a little bit more about you personally. What's your tenure in the band and what do you play?
I am a charter member of the band. I've been there since the first meeting we had.
Wow.
I play cornet. I am a retired school band director, and in kind of my semi-retirement, I teach part-time at Winona State University now.
Well, since you brought that up, I noticed in the lineup of people in the band, there are a few Wisconsinites. Like yourself, there's a bunch of music educators, some retired. There is a bus driver, there's a mailman, there's a massage therapist, an artist, a nurse, an engineer. So it's quite a melting pot, isn't it?
You've got that right. And we do have quite a few Wisconsin residents. I can think of half a dozen right off the top of my head. A number of them that might not even be Wisconsin residents now went to school either at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire or University of Wisconsin-River Falls. So we have quite a connection with the western part of Wisconsin. Yeah, we always enjoy playing at the Phipps Theater in Hudson.
It's a wonderful
it's a great place to play.
It always warms my heart when Minnesota and Wisconsin people can get along.
I remember back in, I think it was like the year 2000, we performed at the Wisconsin Music Educators Association down in Madison.
Mm.
And we were, mentioning all of the Wisconsin natives in our band. We noted that we listened to both Michael Feldman and Garrison Keillor. And, you know, both of those are now retired, so I'll have to come up with a new analogy.
But, yes.
Yeah. I myself listen just as much to Wisconsin Public Radio as Minnesota Public Radio.
Well, good. It's only a river that separates us.
Absolutely.
What the heck? Is it possible, John, to put the Sheldon Theater in words to describe it? Is it real ornate? Is it a simple theater? Is it big? What's the story?
It is quite ornate. Got a main floor and a steep balcony. Probably seats, between 450 and 500 people, I believe.
Okay.
It is all polished brass and dark wood and red velvet seats. It has a very kind of ornate decoration, especially on the ceiling and things like that. It's a beautiful place. The lobby is all marble and tile. And it was built by T.B. Sheldon, who was a lumber magnate back in the late 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
Built as an opera house, as a lot of up-and-coming towns had back then. So it was intended to be a showplace of the city, and it is.
Yeah, interesting how many towns, small to large, had opera houses. Let's talk about brass bands a little bit, the exclusivity of it. Is there a tradition for brass bands? What is the history? Brass bands.
Well, actually, we are kind of based, as are a lot of brass bands, on the British brass band model. And it's kind of interesting that in the last half of the 1800s, brass bands were the predominant type of community, company, band in England, whereas the kinds of bands that had woodwind instruments were more popular here, probably due to the fact that at that time period, America was getting a lot of immigrants from Italy and Germany and those areas. So a lot of those big names you remember, Liberati and some of those band leaders in that last part of the 1800s, were from those areas where woodwinds were more predominant. I think one of the reasons that they joke about, at least, that brass bands became the predominant style in England is a lot of these bands were sponsored by the coal mine or the steel mill or the woolen mill. And, at the time, that was kind of a dangerous profession, and maybe you didn't have full use of all your digits that you would need for woodwind instruments that you might not need for brass instruments.
That's interesting. Is it easy to get music just for brass band? Is there specific music that's written that you can get your hands on? And if so or if not, do you grab things and then have people arrange popular stuff just for a brass band?
We do both.
Okay.
There's quite a bit of music arranged for this because they're still a very popular medium in England, Canada, Australia, the Scandinavian countries. So there's a market for that, and it's very well produced. But we also do what you were talking about, where if there's a tune we especially want to do, especially at Christmas time or something like that, we will have one of our band members arrange it sometimes. So we have a number of arrangements that we've had done for us that are great examples of that. And we actually will have a couple of those on the program on Sunday.
Enjoying a phone call with John Mundy. He is with the Sheldon Theater Brass Band, and they are located in Red Wing, Minnesota, appearing at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson, Wisconsin, Sunday evening. People are looking forward to that, I'll tell you. John, when you think brass band, many think marches, but I take from what you're saying in the arrangement attitude that a brass band can be just as, symphonic or classical as anybody else?
Absolutely. We'll have a couple of marches on the program this Sunday, one British one, one American one, to kind of do a little contrast there.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, speaking of kind of symphonic style works that we're doing a piece that was written 50 years ago as a test piece. Brass band contests are very important and very popular over in England still to this day. What they will do is have a piece especially written for that contest that every band has to play, so it's comparing apples to apples, and no band has an advantage in having done that one before.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was written for the 1967 National Championships of England by a composer named Eric Ball. prominent Salvation Army composer at the time.
Hmm.
And this one is really a technical challenge for every player in our band. Oh. It's called Journey into Freedom. It's a great piece. I'm sure everybody who hears it on Sunday will be impressed by the demands made on every player in the band. Get all those notes in there.
So membership in the brass band, the Sheldon Theater Brass Band, because of what you just described, there probably is a certain level of proficiency required to be a member of the band?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And those of us that are getting into our latter years find that we have to spend a lot of time practicing just to keep up with the demands of the music. But that's what we like to do.
The commitment of members, what's the level of commitment? How many performances do you do? What do you have to do as far as rehearsals go? What does it demand of you?
We rehearse for, well, at least 2.5 hours each Monday evening. We do probably 10 to 12 performances over the course of a year.
Okay.
Everything from in a local town park to full-fledged, you know, concerts at the Sheldon Theater or like at the Phipps, mm-hmm. and in churches, everything in between. But the biggest commitment that we all have is we have to spend time just about every day practicing our instruments just to be able to play at this level. So mm-hmm. it's a lot of individual sitting in your room at home, going through those scales, going through those parts that we have called upon us.
When someone is practicing a brass instrument, that sometimes wafts through the walls of where it is you're living. So I can understand I can understand why you live out in the country. You know, if you lived in town, your neighbors would all say, well, how many brass band members do we have?
Good question, yes.
You also have a bunch of recordings. You like to do CDs, and I read that you are going to be doing a new studio recording pretty soon.
We are in the planning stages of that, yes. We have, I believe it's 5 compact discs that we've recorded over the last 20 years or so. The most recent one is one that features a number of our big band compositions. You know, the famous tunes
sure.
by Ellington and Basie and people like that have been arranged for us. And it also features a great arrangement of Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, featuring our conductor, Jim Kirshner, on the piano.
Hmm. Well, you know, when you mention big band stuff, I think we're touching on the proficiency and the professionalism of the band members. Big band music without a percussion section, that's got to be a little tough.
Well, we do have a percussion section.
Oh, you do?
We do. That, you know, kind of plays whatever is necessary. But when we do big band music, we make sure that we've got a drum set player who can really cut the mustard.
Okay, good. So you do let other people into the group who
yeah.
don't just blow on something.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Like our conductor playing the piano, too. We kid him about that.
We could go on forever because I find this interesting, but the clock on the wall tells me that I have to leave you, but I want to encourage people to find out more about you guys and gals before your performance at the Phipps on Sunday evening, and you can do that online. Give us the website, would you please, John?
We are www.stbb.org.
Even I can remember that.
Yeah, there's pictures of the members and performances upcoming and all sorts of fun stuff.
I've had fun finding out more about brass bands, the existence of many of them. You're one of 3 real iconic brass bands in Minnesota, I read. That's pretty neat.
There are 3 that have been around for a while, and there's one that's relatively new. There are also a few in Wisconsin that we have friends that play in. There's one in Milwaukee. There's one in Madison. There's one called the North Winds Band. I think they're based up and around Spooner.
Cool.
So there's at least a few that I know of, and probably even more getting started.
Yep. It's a big deal. I mean, there's a North American Brass Band Association. There's a Great American Brass Band Festival in June down in Kentucky, I read about.
We've taken part in all of those. And in fact, we won our division championship 1 year of North America, and we came in 2nd another year. So those are kind of feathers in our hat. As most of our members have gotten a little older, we we have not chosen to go to the contests anymore, but we have done those, and we certainly have a lot of respect for the bands that still take part in those competitions.
Good deal. John Mundy, thanks so much for all the information on the Sheldon Theater Brass Band. Travel safely to Hudson, and please keep in touch with us here at Wisconsin Public Radio.
Absolutely. Thank you.
There they are, the Sheldon Theater Brass Band, another musical amenity well within our West Wisconsin reach, appearing 7 p.m. Sunday night at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. Thephipps.org is their website. Let's find out what's on stage in Western Wisconsin. Here again is Jim Oliver.
Thanks, Al. Pump Boys and Dinettes will open the 2017 season May 31st at the Red Barn Theater of Rice Lake. The show will continue through June 10th. Stuart Little will be staged for general audiences through Sunday at the Old Gem Theater in New Richmond. The show will play weekdays for school groups through June the 9th. The Bare Bones Ensemble Theater will present Harold Pinter's Party Time and New World Order Friday and Saturday at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. And the Marvelous Marvelettes will close its run this Friday and Saturday at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Time for a couple more Spectrum memoranda. Yes, that's plural, I think. At the Heide Center in Chippewa Falls, the exhibit Transition to Perception is up through May 25th, featuring Chippewa Falls High School artists. CVCA.net is the website there. The exhibit Rural Artists of Wisconsin from the University of Wisconsin is on display at the Northern Lake Center for the Arts in Amory, featuring work from the 1940s, inspired and aided by well-known regional artist John Stewart Curry. That's up through July 7th, so a lot of time to go there. Hey, thanks to Kate the Spranger, as in into action, getting out the word for us. Dean, who always tries to reduce the static. Jim Oliver, as always. And thank you for providing a crowd that's engaged, interested, smart, and supportive of the people with and about whom we talk each week. Speaking of that, next week, music from a combo of individual greats. Time for more artistic road tripping and more on Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross for Jim Oliver. Thanks, and we'll do it again next week. See you then.